Peace be upon you. God willing, this week we're going to talk about a pretty heavy topic. And inshallah, I'm going to try to break it up into multiple parts so we can fully grasp all the nuances. And the topic is perfect happiness. And I think the best way to start is from the introduction from the Quran by God's Messenger of the Covenant. And it is titled Perfect Happiness Now and Forever. And it reads, "One of the most elusive objectives of every human being is happiness. The Quran reveals the secret of attaining perfect happiness in this life and forever. We learn from the Quran that happiness is an exclusive quality of the soul. Thus, a body that attains all the material successes it longs for, money, power, fame, etc., often belongs to an unhappy person. Happiness depends totally on the degree of growth and development attained by the soul, the real person. The Quran provides a detailed map towards perfect happiness for both body and soul, both in this world and in the eternal hereafter," see Appendix 15. In numerous verses throughout this proven testament, God personally guarantees the believer's happiness now and forever. Then it cites chapter 10, verse 62 through 64, where it reads, "Happiness now and forever. Absolutely, God's allies have nothing to fear, nor will they grieve. They are those who believe and lead a righteous life. For them, joy and happiness in this world, as well as in the hereafter, this is God's unchangeable law. Such is the greatest triumph." So, where to begin? One of the probably the best places to start is defining, you know, perfect happiness. That perfect happiness is different than the temporary happiness that, you know, every human being experiences from time to time when they eat, you know, delicious steak or delicious dessert, or they're hanging out with friends, or they're playing a game, or, you know, they're engaged in some sport or some activity. Obviously, you know, people get happiness out of it. But the difference between that and perfect happiness is that perfect happiness is absolutely sustainable in the long term. And as God shows in the verses, that it's something that we can have literally from today all through eternity, because it transcends the body, right? It's the real self, when the real self, the soul, is nourished, when the soul is at peace. That's what true happiness is. So the best way to describe it is actually in these three verses we just read in 10:62. It says, God's allies have nothing to fear, nor will they grieve. And we're going to look at some of the other verses that talk about this point. But when you think about fear, fear is the thinking that this destruction is going to come for you in the future. It's nervousness, it's anxiousness, it's this belief, and it's faith is what it is, in destruction. It's faith in disaster. As opposed to when you don't have fear and you have trust in God, you're absolutely optimistic, and you're absolutely, you're forthcoming with what God is basically going to hand off to you. And the other aspect is grief. Grief is the belief of something that you've missed or something that's happened in the past. That's eating away at you, that's eating away at your consciousness, your state of mind, your joy. And God is telling us those who are perfectly happy will have no fear and they'll have no grief. And again, inshallah, we'll look at some of the verses that talk more about that. The other aspect that I wanted to point out is in verse 10:64, where it says, this is God's unchangeable law. They are those who believe and lead a righteous life. For them, joy and happiness in this world as well as in the hereafter. And it says, this is God's unchangeable law. Now, you think of the laws of nature that God has instilled. We have the law of gravity. We have the strong and weak nuclear force, right? We have the laws of thermodynamics. These are laws that God has instituted in this world, in this universe. And no one questions these laws in the fact that, you know, under the conditions that they apply, that's the outcome that you're going to obtain. For instance, the law of gravity. You know, if I stand on top of a building and I drop a rock or a penny, you know, no one questions that that penny is going to drop down towards the center of the earth in that trajectory. No one thinks that, oh, they're going to drop the penny and it's going to go shooting up, even if they do it a million times. And God is telling us that the law of perfect happiness now and forever is in the exact same criteria. Meaning that if you apply the commandments and the instructions that God has given to us, that we are guaranteed perfect happiness. And the other aspect that's worth mentioning again is that perfect happiness can happen immediately, right? It's not something that people have to work for. They go through their whole life, they die, and then in heaven, they get to basically be perfectly happy. Perfect happiness can start now and forever, meaning that if you're able to obtain it in this life, you can continue that state of perfect happiness beyond this life into the hereafter. And the reason being, it's because when we're perfectly happy, it's something that transcends the body. It's something that transcends the material world. It's an exclusive quality of the soul, that when the soul is perfectly happy, this is something that you can carry with you into the hereafter. And in 16, verse 97, it says, "Anyone who works righteousness, male or female, while believing, we will surely grant them a happy life in this world, and we will surely pay them their full recompense on the day of judgment for their righteous works." You know, we see so many times in, different religions, that people believe that this life is suffering, this life is misery, this life is all, bad news. And whoever suffers the most in this life will be the rewarded the most in the hereafter. So you see people who basically spend their whole life suffering, going through hardship, and they think that they're doing God a favor by doing this. What does that show of their God? If God treated the believers and the disbelievers in the same manner, and allowed the believers to suffer, to have hardship, to the point of retributive. If they were always ill and sick and poor and just, malnourished, what would that say of God? God, in essence, is all-powerful, all-knowing, and he's telling us repeatedly, this is something that everyone has access to, but only those who have the insight and the sincerity to go after it, that God will reward them for it. And in future podcasts, we'll look deeper into that concept. Back to the concept of fear or grief. You know, this is a fundamental kind of foundation of the Quran. In chapter 2, verse 62, and chapter 5, verse 69, it reads, "Surely those who believe, those who are Jewish, the Christians, the converts, anyone who, one, believes in God, two, believes in the last day, and three, leads a righteous life, will receive their recompense from their Lord. They have nothing to fear, nor will they grieve." And again, in 2 verse 112, it says, "Indeed, those who submit themselves absolutely to God alone while leading a righteous life will receive their recompense from their Lord. They have nothing to fear, nor will they grieve." The way I see this is, imagine you're on a road. On one side of the road, you have a barrier that's fear. That's the thought and the threat of something in the future. And then on the other side of the barrier, you have grief. Grief is the thought and basically frustration with something that's happened in the past. When you're going through life and you sense fear or you sense grief, this is, in essence, it's telling me I need to recalibrate. I need to put my trust in God 100%, because if I do what God has commanded me to do, God guarantees that I will never fear and I will never grieve. Meaning that if I am fearing something in the future, or I'm grieving about something in the past, that I need to recalibrate. I need to assess myself. I need to see what I'm doing wrong and correct it. And it's really interesting to think of the concept of fear. In the Quran, God says that the fear is the devil's tool, right? That the devil instills fear into the people, in essence, to get them to bend to his will. The opposite of fear is faith. Because fear is the concept that you think that you're heading towards destruction, towards retribution, towards disaster. Faith is the belief that you're heading towards reward, you're heading towards good things that God has in store for you. And you think about it, there is no difference in the amount of energy that's exerted to have fear or faith. Yet we have that choice. Which one do we want to focus on? Which one do we want to spend our time and our energy on? Do we want to think that, we're always going to be in a state of constant alertness and destruction and disaster? Or do we want to put our trust in God and realize that God has put his angels to look over us, to watch over us, that if we have sincerity, that if we have absolute devotion to God alone, that there's no reason to ever fear. Grief, on the other hand, is this thought that, I'm not equipped with something. You know, something happened in my past, and there's if it was only different, I would be better off today. And we have to understand that God is the one who constructed our lives. God is the one who constructed the outcomes that take place. And God is setting us up for whatever it is that we're meant to, we're destined to encounter in the future. And all these life experiences that we've had, you know, as catastrophic as they might appear, as much hardship as we think we've had, God has set this up for us for our own good. That if we only use it constructively, we'll see that there was a reason for all this. You know, maybe you had an issue in the past. Maybe you didn't get along with your parents. You lost your job. You did X, Y, and Z. God knows what. But God was planning all that. I mean, in the past, we looked at the story of Joseph. We looked at the history of Moses, and we would have never have thought that this is the path that one needs to take to reach that level of faith, that level of belief, where God honors these individuals. And inshallah, this is something that we strive for, right? We strive for perfect happiness, and it's a reward we get for putting our absolute trust in God, for living our lives by the Quran, for the sake of God. So how else does God describe the characteristic of someone who's perfectly happy? Because this is a very important item. Is, you know, if we can't define something, we'll have a really tough time trying to achieve it. And God tells us in the Quran the characteristics of what I believe someone who's perfectly happy will experience. And a lot of them actually come from the descriptions of heaven. But God tells us in the Quran that we can experience heaven here on earth. And the first one that just it really resonates with me is in chapter 36, verse 55. It says, "The dwellers of paradise will be on that day happily busy." Right? A lot of times when you have this illusion of or this description of paradise, of heaven, right? It's a lot of people lounging around, right? They always have they're on a hammock on a beach and, you know, doing nothing. But when you think about it, the point in your life that probably you're the most happy is something that's called the state of flow, right? Where you're challenged just enough that you're fully engaged and you're fully immersed in that activity, that you literally you lose track of life, you lose track of, you know, your body, and you're just in this state of kind of like perfect concentration. Now, this can be used for good or for bad, needless to say. If, you know, that state of perfect concentration takes you away from God, that's never good. But someone who can be in that state of perfect concentration, that perfect focus, you can guarantee that they're in a state of happiness. Now, imagine if you can sustain that now and forever. The difference is someone who's in a state of flow while they play a sport, you know, let's say it's a golf or basketball or football, or at work. You know, that they're going through a project and they're just absolutely absorbed in it. The downside is once that project, that game, that event ends, what then? But what God is trying to teach us is how to reach a state of flow in life, that we're literally flourishing through life, that the day-to-day activities are always set before us, that it's going to keep us perfectly engaged. And during that entire time, we're thinking and we're praising God. And it's something that it's when you think about, you know, some people think they need a hobby, they need a task or something to reach a state of flow. But if you can have a life itself be your state of flow from the moment you get up to the moment you fall asleep at night, that throughout that entire process, you're fully engaged, you're fully immersed in life, right? And we looked at this, we think about it, it's because we look at life differently than the average person. The second that you take that, you know, you drink your morning coffee or you have your breakfast, you know, the second you get up out of bed and you take that first breath and you realize that, you know, you're alive, you're in this world, all this you're conscious of, you're conscientious of your environment, and you're appreciative, and you're constantly just you're in the state of awe. There's a quote from Rumi. It says, Sell your cleverness for bewilderment. And you think of that, to be in a state of constant awe, that you're never taking this life, this world, these pleasures, these sensations for granted. You know, think about, I've heard this before. It's like, think about when you're, if you're standing right now listening to this, or you're driving, or you're sitting, think about the pressure that's on your feet, right? Think about the sensations of your hands. You know, think about each time you blink, all these construction that God has created. And it's something that it's resonating through us in this life. And if we can fully grasp it, fully think about it, we can reach new levels that in your day-to-day activities, you're just constantly in the state of awe, state of appreciation. Now imagine if you can keep that state indefinitely. It's very profound. Let's continue. Another characteristic, it's in 48:26. It says, while those who disbelieve were enraged and their hearts were filled with the pride of the days of ignorance, God blessed his messenger and the believers with peaceful contentment and directed them to uphold the word of righteousness. This is what they well deserved. God is fully aware of all things. So this verse, it's telling me a couple different things. One is, you know, it's talking about the disbelievers. So we can say this is a characteristic that is not going to be in line with perfect happiness. And it says, you know, that they're enraged. And you see some people, you know, they're driving, they're just angry, white knuckles, furious, cutting people off, this and that. And you realize that, you know, the destruction they're causing, other than, you know, the maybe the anger, resentment that they're dispersing in their day-to-day activities, but the amount of destruction they're causing themselves is so much greater than any frustration that they can deploy to others. And the other aspect that it points out is this feeling of pride, right? It says, filled with the pride of the days of ignorance, right? Pride is this belief that I achieved this. I was responsible for this. It was me. And the reality is, not only was it not them, but when you get to the point, and you see this a lot, you see this with high-level executives, politicians, that when you get to that point, and this is a proof that's cited in the Quran, is that in this life, we start as a baby, completely defenseless, and we grow and we gain strength. And with strength, oftentimes comes ego. But then we all end in the same way, where we're, again, feeble, we're dependent, right? We reach an old age where we can't care for ourselves. And what happens to the person who thinks that, you know, it's their doing, their power, their strength, their might that was able to achieve these things? You know, they're crushed because everything that they thought they were, they've lost. And you see people, they've you know, they put so much emphasis on their looks, their bodies, their you know, all these vanities, in essence, that in a span of a very short span of time, they're going to lose it, right? And on the contrast, God describes the believers as peaceful contentment. And in 34:37, I'm going to jump ahead a little. It reads, "It is not your money or your children that bring you closer to us. Only those who believe and lead a righteous life will receive their reward for their works, multiplied manifold. In the abode of paradise, they will live in perfect peace." And again, in 44:55 says, they enjoy in it all kinds of fruits in perfect peace. So the contrast between someone who's enraged and prideful versus someone who has peaceful contentment in perfect peace, perfect, to the point that, you know, they have no fear, no grief, they're not worried, they're not concerned. And we see that, it says in the introduction, was it last week we're reading about ego, that it says, you know, you put a dog, it doesn't care if its owner is rich or poor, how it's dressed, what is, if it's male or female, black or white, it's indifferent to that, right? The dog has peaceful, perfect contentment. And similarly, you know, if we reach a state of perfect happiness, we can guarantee that not only are we going to have absolute contentment, we're going to have perfect peace. Now, this is different than some people think, like, oh, you know, perfect peace, perfect contentment is just, you know, you're a bump on a log, you're lazy, you're not striving. And that's not true, because we saw in the previous example is that they're happily busy, right? It means that the ideal believer, the ideal person who has perfect happiness, is constantly, you know, in a state of awe. They're pushing themselves, they're striving, they're learning, they're growing, and they're fully content with whatever God provides for them. Meaning that, you know, God can give them $1 million or God can give them, 2 cents, and they're going to be completely content and happy, because they realize that when you have access to an unlimited resource, at God's disposal, you're not concerned with what you have at the moment. Because at any moment, God knows when you need it, and he's willing, he has no hesitation to give someone who needs something when they need it. And he knows best when it is that that person needs that item, and will give it to them without delay. And if we understand, I heard this analogy once, you know, imagine if you lived on a lake, right, and there was plenty of fish in the sea, you know, in the lake, and you had a fridge, you know, freezer, would you be tempted, in essence, to just stock up that freezer and that fridge with all the fish that you can catch in a given day? Why? Why would you? We wouldn't need to. Why? It's because we know that we have access to that lake at any time, any day. We can go in and get fresh fish. And if we have more people coming in over for dinner, we can go and catch more fish and serve everyone. And if it's just, you know, say myself, I can get enough fish just for me to eat. Now you think of this, that you have access to a loan from God that has unlimited capital, has unlimited resources, and God knows best when you need it, where you need it, how you need it, and will deploy it to you on his timetables for your best interest. And the believers, they have absolute peace and contentment with this arrangement, because they realize God is the one not only who created, you know, this universe, but created you from an embryo, right? When you were nothing, when you weren't even, what's the expression? A twinkle in your mother's eye. From one cell that God replicated us to these human beings with fully functional, heart, brains, digestive system, all this. And it's our ego that makes us think that we want to do things on our timetable. Let's move on. In 7 verse 43 and 15 verse 47, it's talking about that we will remove all jealousy from their hearts. Now, a lot of times in this world, people, you know, we have jealousy. We see people who are rich, famous, or they're getting accolades or rewards or recognition, and we think that should be me. And we think that their success is taking away from us. And this is a characteristic that someone who's perfectly happy is going to have zero jealousy, because they realize, again, it's if you have unlimited access to God's resources, but you have complete trust that God knows what to deploy, when to deploy it, as far as the resources, the capital, the needs are, then you'll never think twice, because you realize God is giving you the perfect amount of what it is that you need when you need it. And similarly, God is giving someone else their perfect amount of what they need when they need. The irony is some people who ask for more and want more and God delivers it to them, it's actually to confirm their sinfulness. Because you hear it a lot, and there's verses in the Quran that talks about, they say, oh, if God gave me, you know, basically more resources, I'd be charitable. And sure enough, God gives them the resources, and what do? They become unappreciative. They become more greedy. They become less charitable. Statistically looking, actually, what's interesting is the percentage of charity that people give diminishes on average as people get wealthier, right? Because if I own, let's say, I only had $100, and I give someone else $20 because they're in need, you know, that's 20% of my wealth that I've just given away. But if I had $1 million, I would have to give $200,000 away. Now, proportionally, it's one and the same. But it's a lot harder for someone to give away $200,000 as it is for someone to give away $20. And that's why with a lot of wealth comes a lot of responsibility. And it's probably good to make this into a podcast in itself and talk about, because part of perfect happiness is perfect health and perfect wealth. Without perfect health and perfect wealth, it's hard to understand perfect happiness. And these are all kind of infused in one another. But let's, inshallah, we'll talk more in future podcasts about that. And let's keep going. So in 2563, it reads, "The worshippers of the Most Gracious are those who tread the earth gently, and when the ignorant speak to them, they only utter peace." And in 3134, it reads, "Who give to charity during the good times as well as the bad times, they're suppressors of anger and pardoners of the people. God loves the charitable." And what I take away from these two verses, is that, okay, so in 3134, it says they're suppressors of anger. And in 2563, it says, "When the ignorant speak to them, they only utter peace." It's this concept of anger, right? What is anger? Anger is the feeling that you've been treated unfairly, right? That you have resentment, and or something, has raised your blood pressure and has gotten you to a state where you want to go fisticuffs with someone else, and it shows a complete lack of control of one's emotions. Because when you think about it, when you're angry, right, what are you achieving? You're not, most of the times when someone's angry, they're alone, they're all, in the car, they're at work, and they're just the only person that they're hurting are themselves. But it's showing that they have a complete lack of control of their emotions. And this is one of the key themes of someone who has perfect happiness, is that they have absolute control over their emotions. You can think of, in every human being consists of a human and a jinn. And the jinn is often referred to as kind of the wild horse. And our duty in this world is to tame this wild horse, right? This wild horse is the body. Anything the body wants, it wants food, it wants fun, it wants lust, people give it to the body. And if someone, disrespects or frustrates the body, it loses its cool. But someone who's a submitter, someone who's achieved perfect happiness, they're able to tame this wild horse, and they're in control of their emotions to the point that if someone speaks to them, in this expression, ignorant speak to them, they only utter peace because it doesn't bother them. Their ego is killed. There isn't anything there that you can offend, you can hurt, because to them it's no different than, I love this example is, if you're talking with someone who's 5 years old and they insult you, are you going to be offended? Like, you're 5 years old, you'd blow it off. But what's the difference if it's someone who's 5 years old, or it's your boss, or it's, some stranger on the street, or your close friend? Someone who has that level of contentment, that peace of mind, when someone says something to them, as opposed to, at first off, you give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they meant something else. You don't try to read into it. But even if they did mean it, so what? Right? You let it bother you. Do you let it take your joy away? And it starts off that, we suppress our anger. But you get to a point where you never are angry. Because if you realize that God is doing everything, that God is in complete control, is there ever a reason to be angry? If Joseph knew, he had the insight that God had great things in store for him, and his brothers abandoned him, left him in a well for dead, does it make sense to get angry at that point? Because you realize God, this is all part of God's plan. And when we understand that, even though we might not have the foresight of seeing what the outcome of an event is, but we have the trust and we know that God is running everything, we'll never have a reason to get angry. In 1328, it reads, "They're the ones whose hearts rejoice in remembering God." Absolutely, by remembering God, their hearts rejoice. Now, we pray 5 times a day. Before we eat, we mention God's name. The second we get up in the morning, the second we go to sleep at night, we're commemorating God. We're thinking about God. We say anything in the future, we say God willing. During this entire time, we should be rejoicing, we should be happy, realizing that we have an allegiance with the Lord of the universe, the person, the individual, the entity in this universe that's controlling everything. That if we're on God's side, that if we're trying our utmost to please God, what else could we possibly want? Right? God owns everything. God has access to everything. God can give us anything we want that's good for us. Is there anything else that someone can want? It reminds me of, you always hear this. You see a genie and it says it grants you 3 wishes. And everyone says, well, I just asked for an infinite number of wishes. God is that infinite number of wishes because God has access to everything. God is the end outcome of all our joy. And if we understand that, if we truly grasp that, not only can we have everything that God tells us in regards to perfect happiness, but we can have it today. We can have it now. And all through forever. It's awesome. And the last point, and this one's huge in regards to perfect happiness, is in 3174, it says, they have deserved God's blessings and grace. No harm ever touches them, for they have attained God's approval. God possesses infinite grace. And this is the aspect that is oftentimes the most difficult for people to understand, is that nothing bad will happen to you. No harm will ever touch you if you have perfect happiness. And we're going to go a lot deeper into this one in particular because this is the aspect that people have the toughest time with traditionally. To think that if you're in God's kingdom, that if you're in God's domain, that his angels are taking charge over you and nothing bad will ever happen to you and your loved ones. And I want to end with Psalm that really I think takes this point home. It's Psalm 91. It's entitled Security of the One Who Trusts in the Lord. And it reads, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust, for it is he who delivers you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and a bulwark. You will not be afraid of the terror by night or of the arrow that flies by day, of the pestilent that stalks in darkness or of the destruction that lays waste at noon. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not approach you. You will only look with your eyes and see the recompense of the wicked, for you have made the Lord my refuge, even the Most High your dwelling place. No evil will befall you, nor will any plague come near you, your tent, for he will give his angels charge concerning you, to guard you in all your ways. They will bear you up in their hands, that you do not strike your foot against the stone. You will tread upon the lion and the cobra, the young lion and the serpent you will trample down. Because he has loved me, therefore I will deliver him. So this is God talking. I will set him securely on high because he has known my name. He will call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With a long life I will satisfy him and let him see my salvation. So inshallah, we're going to stop there. God willing, there's so much more that can be talked about in this topic, and I'm going to try to talk about some of the other items around it. But if you have any comments, questions, email us at QuranTalk@gmail.com. Until next time, peace and God bless.